We will move on to the fourth case of this morning, which is United States against Tyler Urkel. Is that how you can tell? Urkel Tyler. All right. Mr. Woodward.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Brian Woodward. I represent the defendant, Urkel Tyler, in this matter. Your Honors, we're called upon to decide whether or not Mr. Tyler's Fourth Amendment rights were violated in this stop and search, and whether the district court's motion to suppress was wrongfully granted, or denied, rather. We believe, Your Honors, that the United States versus McDonald case out of this Seventh Circuit controls the outcome. In that case, of course, a driver, the defendant, was stopped for making a activating his left-hand turn signal on a 90-degree turn, I believe it was, which was not illegal, not against the laws.
It wasn't a 90-degree turn. It was just a curve in the road.
I thought I read somewhere in the opinion that it was a 90-degree turn, but at any rate, he activated his turn signal. The road curved. It wasn't illegal to do that. It wasn't against the law. That was the basis for the stop in that case, and any evidence that came thereafter was suppressed. In this case, Mr. Tyler was stopped. Yes, Your Honor?
Let me ask you this. I mean, one thing that strikes me is that your position seems to be that when the officers stopped Mr. Tyler, they did so, and they told him, in fact, right away that they were stopping him because he had an open beverage container, alcoholic beverage container. And, of course, it turns out there's no law about that. But the government's position seems to be that they could have just pulled their car up next to him on a residential street and said, hey, can we talk to you for a minute? And pretty much the same thing would have unfolded. So, in other words, your focus seems to be what was in their head, but that's a very subjective way of looking at this stop.
I would like to address that issue also, because I think the stop and the search in this particular case fails on a number of levels.
Okay.
If you go into a typical reasonable suspicion analysis and a Terry-type stop or a consensual encounter, we know we have consensual encounters on this end, and at the other end we have probable cause arrests. With Terry stops in the middle, each of these benchmarks are intertwined by the doctrine of reasonableness. This court has held that. Had they stopped him under a reasonable suspicion analysis, we have to determine all those. We look at, first of all, was he seized? I believe there's no question he was seized. In the MacArthur case cited in our brief, this court has set forth certain factors that one should look at to determine whether or not an individual has been seized. He was obviously seized. He was told, number one, he was violating a non-existent law. He was taken, his ID was taken from him so that they could do a warrant check. He asked to leave, even to throw the bottle away, which they observed. He was denied on more than one occasion the right to do that, and he was never told he was free to leave. And if you look in the supplemental appendix and in the report, they said, we didn't let him leave until we were done with our stop. This was clearly a stop. This was not a consensual encounter. He was seized for Fourth Amendment purposes. So, assuming that he was seized, we have to look, did they have reasonable suspicion? The only fact that anyone could point to in support of a reasonable suspicion analysis, assuming that that's the case, we don't believe it's the case. When they got out of the car, they said, do you know it's illegal to walk down the sidewalk with an open container? Well, clearly it wasn't. And they ticketed him for that, don't forget. But walking down the open sidewalk, or the public sidewalk, with an open container, that fact in and of itself is insufficient to establish reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop. Because, remember, there has to be some articulable fact that they can point to that he's violating a crime,
Just to back up, if in my hypothetical they had just pulled their car up and somebody had hopped out and said, you know, hey, can we talk to you for a minute on the consensual end of things, You are arguing, I just want to make sure I understand your argument, that he, under those circumstances, if he had said, hey, I'd like to go throw away, you know, this Burger King bag I'm carrying, he would have been free to go over to the trash can and do it, or the bottle or whatever he was carrying, that there would have been objectively ascertainable differences compared to what really happened to him, which was, no, you can't go throw your bottle away, you know, no, you're not free to go, give me your ID, all that.
Certainly. And if that would have happened, perhaps he would have thrown the bottle away and kept on going. That was certainly his right to do so. He didn't have to. He wasn't obligated to talk to those officers if it was a consensual encounter. We don't have that circumstance. That didn't happen here. He was seized for Fourth Amendment purposes. So then, we have to go back. Did they have reasonable suspicion to do so? Walking down a public sidewalk with an open container, which is permitted and a legal act, is not sufficient in and of itself for reasonable suspicion analysis. Because
there's nothing in this police report that indicates he had the appearance of somebody who was intoxicated, right?
That is exactly right. Public intoxication is obviously an offense under the laws of the state of Indiana. You often see the clothes were disheveled. He was stammering. His eyes were bloodshot and watery. If they could have observed these type of things, stumbling down the sidewalk, obviously that's cause to investigate for Terry purposes. Set all that aside for a second. This case is even more egregious because we have a full-blown search. We have a full-blown search of the defendant in this case on less than probable cause.
But you're talking about sort of phase two at this point, when they notice the bulge and plunge their hand in the pocket?
The government likes to call it phase two. I think it's all phase one, because once the illegal stop occurred at the beginning, there are some cases cited by the government. I think Wong Sun is one, and the Pedroza case of the Seventh Circuit. But those cases have to deal with whether or not subsequent consent can vitiate the illegal taint of the wrong committed by the government in the first instance. And we don't have consent in this case. This is not a consent case. Mr. Tyler never consented to anything. Now, getting back to your question about what we'll call phase two for argument purposes, the facts are, and the officers testified, that he took a step backward. The officers testified, he was told, you're free to go. Simultaneously, as they're handing his license back and telling him he's free to go, they say, oh, by the way, what's in your pocket? What's the bulge in your pocket? You know, when this happens simultaneously, and they say, one after the other, you're free to go, what's in your pocket? I'm not aware of any court that has ever held that you can continue in questioning the individual. I'm into my rebuttal time, but the issue is, can you vitiate your initial illegal act, unconstitutional stop, by saying, you know what, you're free to go, but I'm going to continue to question you? That's a dangerous precedent to set. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
What were they supposed to do when they saw the bulge?
There's a number of things they could have done, and the Constitution permits that. They could have asked for consent, number one.
No, they could have searched. Whether they can use it as evidence is a different question.
Right, and that's, in fact, what they did, because don't forget, after they got the bag, these officers aren't the one that opened the bag. Page 16 of the transcript, another backup officer arrived shortly thereafter, grabbed the bag, and looked inside.
Well, the point is,
without cause of any type.
The point is, once they determined or thought there was a bulge there, which could be a weapon, they probably have a right to or are going to take a look at it. But whether they violate the exclusionary rules or the evidence should be excluded is a different question.
Right.
And here your argument is
we have to
everything is out the window because this there was no ordinance like this, and all this stuff about maybe he was actually intoxicated is some second guessing by them after they realized they didn't have an ordinance to fall back on.
There were inchoate hunches, and that's exactly what we have here.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Ms. Johnson?
Thank you. Good morning. Sharon Johnson, Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Indiana. The defendant relies heavily on United States versus McDonald. This case is strikingly different than the facts in McDonald.
I don't know. I think you've got a tough case here.
Well, Judge...
4:30 on Saturday afternoon, a couple doors away from this guy's own house. No law against... Now there apparently is a law, but at that time there was no law against carrying an open container.
Well, the government submits that the defendant was not stopped because he had this open beer container and they thought it was a violation of the law to have this open beer bottle. They stopped him because they had reasonable suspicion that the defendant was intoxicated.
They never said that, though.
What they stated was that the district court's finding determined that the initial stop was a Terry stop and that it was supported by reasonable suspicion that the defendant may be publicly intoxicated.
What are the facts that support that?
The officers stated that this was a residential area. It was approximately 4:30 p.m. in the afternoon. It was the time when the children were out of school.
What does that have to do with public intoxication?
What are
the facts of a public intoxication violation, apart from the open intoxicant?
Well, there are different levels of public intoxication. Of course, the easy case is, as one counsel pointed out, where the person's stammering or staggering or walking.
What if we
walking.
Got in this case?
In this case, the fact that it was 4:30 in the afternoon, as they approach, this man is holding an open beer bottle. They approach him to talk to him, and then his whole demeanor changes. And that's when we get into this, what I call the phase two of this initial encounter.
But that's after the stop. What are the facts of public intoxication at the time of the stop, at the moment of the stop, besides the open intoxicant?
At the moment of the stop, the officers stated that it was approximately 4:30 p.m.
You've said that they like three or four times. That has nothing to do with public intoxication.
These were the factors that they considered.
But they clearly didn't, is the problem. And as Judge Sykes says, it could be 4:30 in the afternoon or 7 o'clock at night. That doesn't tell you anything about the people walking down the street. And if you look at the Hammond Police Department supplemental report, there's not a word in it about public intoxication. Not a word. Well, and so the contemporary evidence, the reason why they stop, and their ticket says open alcoholic beverage, there's just no evidence.
Well, clearly, even if there was not reasonable suspicion to believe that this person was intoxicated, the officers had the right to make a consensual encounter with the defendant.
Next problem you have, though, is what's consensual about this? If the police come up to a person and say, you are violating an ordinance, we are stopping you, which is what happens to him, that's not a consensual encounter.
Well, I think at the initial stop, when they talk to Mr. Tyler, they don't tell him we're stopping you to cite you for having this open public.
Well, evidence
in fact,
is that they were.
I thought they did. I thought he said that he wasn't really drinking had that open container. He just picked it up and he was looking for a place to throw it away.
Well, that was the defense.
Something I do in front of my house often in Milwaukee.
Well, a lot of
drunk people that walk around in Milwaukee.
Well, at that point, one, the officers had no knowledge that the defendant lived nearby at that time when they made their initial encounter.
But and their report says, upon approach, we explained to the subject that it was against the law to walk down the street with an open alcohol container. He then stated he had just picked the bottle of beer up and so on and so forth. So their report does not seem to say what you're suggesting. Their report seems to say, we walked up to him and said, you're violating the law.
Well, after the hearing, after all of the evidence came in, it was clear that the district court made a finding that the officers were trying to ensure the public safety in this residential area near a park where children were present because this defendant had an open beer bottle.
Do you think public safety is implicated every time somebody has an open beer bottle?
Most certainly. there is a inference that there may be an issue of public safety.
I mean, when I think... Have you been to Taste of Chicago ever?
Well, that's a little bit different because that's a municipal area.
Why is that different? No, you're saying it's public safety is implicated when people walk around with open beer bottles.
Well, there wasn't any taverns in that area. There wasn't a fair. This was a situation where there was...
That changed the safety factor. If anything, less safe around a tavern than it would be if it's just one guy walking down the street
these officers looked at the totality of the circumstances and made this consensual encounter. Even if the court does not believe it's reasonable suspicion, we submit that it was definitely a consensual encounter during this first situation.
The only way you can reasonably look at this case is that the officers thought it was against the law to carry an open container. They thought there was an ordinance against it, and they were wrong. Period.
Well, Judge, even if they were wrong, the fact that they could approach him for no reason at all, just to make a consensual encounter and ask him for his identification, which the law supports... It was the defendant's actions that heightened the scenario and made it to a position where the officers had to protect their safety. This was not a situation where they went immediately trying to grab this bulge. It was not until the defendant took the beer bottle, raised it above their heads as if in a threatening manner. At that point, the officers had the right to try to protect themselves, and which they did. And that's when the struggle ensued, and that's when the officers were able to recover this bulge and determine that it contained crack cocaine. The officers were attempting to protect themselves at that point, and again, the government submits that this was a two-phase incident. The first incident was a consensual encounter. The second phase is heightened when the defendant starts to threaten the officers, and at that point, they're trying to protect themselves, and the officers are clear, as well as the district court's findings, confirmed that the officers were not certain what was causing the bulge, but they had a suspicion that it may be a weapon, or maybe not. But based on the defendant's startled look, they described it as the deer and headlights look, they had the right to protect themselves and determine whether or not that bulge contained contraband or a weapon. If there's no further questions, the government will rest on its brief, and we submit that the district court's findings are supported by the law and the facts. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We will give him his two full minutes because I think we ate into part of them.
Thank you, Your Honor. If this was reasonable suspicion, then every time I have a glass of Chardonnay at the Olive Garden with my wife, every time I have a beer at the beer garden at the parish diocese carnival, every time I go to the Taste of Chicago and have a Bud Light, I am subject to seizure by a police officer who happens to observe me.
Oh, that's not true. The new ordinance, sometimes you're better off not getting back up here. The new ordinance even exempts those sorts of situations. The ordinance that's now in effect.
I'm assuming the same facts that we have in this case, not under a new ordinance, which would exempt those type of things, under the same factual scenario. If I'm in a public place with an alcoholic beverage, and let's say I've consumed most of it, and there's no ordinance against having that open alcoholic beverage, I am subject to seizure under the facts of this case. I think that's clearly inappropriate. It's not permitted under the Fourth Amendment. That it's more than clear that the officers made a mistake of law. It can't be reasonable under these circumstances. This court has held that mistakes of law can't be reasonable. That's why they stopped him. That initial taint cannot be erased by any of the subsequent events, and we would ask that the decision of the district court denying the motion to suppress be reversed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not, Mr. Woodward?
I was, Your Honor.
We appreciate very much your efforts for your client and for the court.
My pleasure.
Thank you also.